W2 TTT Mobile. Good evening, everyone. This is W2 TTT, and this is the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. Are there any stations with emergency or priority traffic? Please call K2BAR. Nothing heard. Welcome again to the Bergen Amateur Radio Association Technical Net. All stations are welcome to participate in this net. This net is about having a conversation about amateur radio, electronics, computers, telecommunications, the arts and sciences surrounding our wonderful hobby, the experiences we've had, the experiences we aspire to have, and the experiences we never want to do again. I remind you, those are really cool stories sometimes, so feel free to bring those forth. And, of course, it's an opportunity to do a for sale swapper wanted exercise. So if you have something that you need, something you want to get rid of, feel free to mention that as well. We also would like you to check in if you have nothing. Why? Because it's hard to address an audience if you don't know who's there. So you can sandbag, but you got to ID at least once. Let us know that you're there. So with no further ado, oh, I probably should announce some other things. Hold on. The PL for this repeater, by the way, is brought to you by the Venture Crew 7373 Amateur Radio Club, and it uses a PL of 151.4, 151.4, and, of course, the frequency is 146.835, and has a down 600 split. So, one other thing is if you would like to access via Echolink, we'll have a separate Echolink check-in that's not call sign based. And when we do, you can access Echolink via the Kilo Delta 2, Bravo Kilo Delta dash Lima for link. KD2 Bravo Kilo Delta dash Lima Echolink. Bob in Park Ridge has been kind enough to provide that facility, and it allows you to access this repeater anytime, not just during net times, via Echolink. So do keep that in mind as well. So with no further ado, let's get on with the check-ins. All stations who begin with the call sign letter Alpha, please call K2BAR.
W2TTT, this is Alpha Lima Zero Yankee. Good evening, Gordon, and I have no comments for the net, but I'll be listening.
Okie dokie, thank you, Ali. Welcome aboard, and thank you for running the Aries net at 8:30. My wife and I required dinner, and that proved to be a wise decision. So thank you for covering. Next is any other alphas? All right, nothing heard. How about, I'm going to mix it up on everybody, how about them whiskeys?
WB2TQT, Art in Oradell.
Good evening, Art. What are your intentions, sir?
Oh, I always forget to say that. I'm so used to the Wednesday evening that where there's just the go-around. I have two things that I'd like to touch base with you. I'd like to hear some of your stories, how you put up your antenna tower, how that went, and construction details and all that type of stuff. And also, Tuesday night at kit night, Jim brought in a little microprocessor, and it had a specific name, and I can't remember the name, so maybe you can give us guys that aren't familiar with those type of items some feedback on it. Back to net control.
Yeah, we can cover both. I would like to just cover the technical aspects of the tower when we get to it, and not any other aspects, if you don't mind. It's not on the air. But and we certainly can talk about the Arduino that Jim had. He had an Arduino Mega 286, that's very nice too. All righty, we'll get to that. Any other whiskeys?
Whiskey Alpha 2, India Sierra Echo, Bob, and Oradell, and I'm just going to sandbag.
Alrighty, Bob. Welcome aboard any other whiskeys. By the way, for those who want to sandbag and have a cold in their throat, they say a little whiskey, honey, and a little lemon, and it's better than cough syrup. Think about it in moderation, folks. Alrighty, how about November's?
NJ2BS, repeat.
Okay, I'm not hearing any November's. How about kilos? Okay, how about someone on Echolink? Anybody on Echolink? Okay. Anyway, Nancy's kibitzing in the background here. Andrew FWI is here, so let's see. So I have an N. I don't have any K's, so we have an N. Any other stations on the repeater? Any call sign type? Okay, so let's get to it. So I'm going to do this in reverse order because Ali is here, and I'm going to point out that he has a lot more current time on an Arduino that's Alpha Romeo Delta Uniform India November Oscar Arduino. Yes, it's an Italian word. It's a small microcontroller. They're relatively expensive. An Arduino Mega does not cost very much. They do come in different configurations with different pinouts and extra interfaces and all kinds of things, but the Arduino Mega 286 is pretty common these days. It's a little bigger than most, but it's got lots of I/O pins so you can turn on and off things. You can also there's also analog inputs, so you can do things like measure voltages through a voltage divider and stuff like that. And actually, I was going to ask Ali to explain that. Ali built a very nice implementation of an iGate, which is an internet gateway for APRS, using a Raspberry Pi and an Arduino. But the Arduino does the sensing, sensor probes. He's got two voltage probes on a design he has and some supporting code, and also a temperature and humidity measurement as well on this Arduino. And he pulls it by a serial port connected to the Raspberry Pi, which could easily be your PC or your Mac or whatever. You can do the same thing. You talk to the Arduino for programming purposes through a USB cable, typically. You configure it like a serial port, and you're pretty much ready to go. The software is sort of a little Python-like, if you're familiar with Python. Or C++, kind of like that. And although it's its own language, it's pretty easily figured out. There's also a ton of code out there that you can use and replicate a lot of experiments and then tinker with stuff as you see fit. So a lot of good things you can do with an Arduino without a lot of programming experience. You can start modifying other people's code, and it generally works out pretty well. So, Ali, I'm going to ask you to talk about how you set up that Arduino as a probe. I described the what. Maybe you can describe the how. AL0YW2TTT.
72TTT, AL0Y. All right, Gordon. Well, thanks for bringing me to this conversation. I have a lot to say about Arduinos. Let me start by just going a little bit deeper with details. So there are different flavors of Arduinos, starting from like the Arduino Nano, the Arduino Uno, the Mega. There are different types, but they are all the same when it comes to the concept of having inputs and outputs pins. So what the input is, well, let's go with the output first. The output first is you control the Arduino to give you either a high signal or a low signal, which means either you get in the 5 volts or you get in no volts on a certain pin based on whatever condition you program it to do. When it comes to inputs, it can actually read, on some pins, it can either read a 0 or 1 or high or low signals, and on some pins, it can actually read a whole range from 0 volt to 5 volt, which what we call is analog read for the Arduino. So it can do digital outputs and it can do digital and analog inputs. Your range is always between 0 and 5 volts for the Arduinos. Let me drop. So when you read that value from 0 to 5 volts, your program that you put into the Arduino will read that value as as a number between 0 and 1023. So mainly you have 1024 values that correspond to whatever volts you give to the Arduino in a certain on a certain pin. So mainly you have about a resolution of 0.03 volts intervals for reading the values, which is pretty much very good for most of the applications that you may actually want to run on an Arduino. So, back to what Gordon was saying about actually running an iGate, and we use the Arduino to sensor voltage for a power supply and a battery. You may ask, but a power supply is probably like giving out 13.8 volts or around that, same as the battery, and I just said that the Arduino uses 5 volts range. So the solution that we came up with, let me drop. The solution that we came up with was actually using voltage dividers. So what I did is I put 4 resistance, each is 10 k ohms, in series between the positive side of the power supply or the battery and the negative side. So barely, I'm not really drawing any current. Of course I am, but I mean it's very negligible if we can actually say that. And the configuration for the 4 resistance is I'm reading the value in 1 resistance only out of the 4. So I'm reading, like, I'm mainly doing the voltage divider as 3 to 1, and I'm reading the 1 part of the configuration. So mainly I'm only reading 25% of whatever the power supply is giving. So if the power supply is saying, let's say it's giving out 12 volts, so on the Arduino side it's going to read that as 3 volts only. So mainly I get that value and multiply it by 4, I get the actual value that I'm getting from the power supply. I'm doing the same thing for the battery, so I can actually run that for both the power supply and the battery, along with other sensors, if you will, and I kind of speak about the sensors as well, but before I go to that, let me ask if there are any questions about this.
You're good, Ali, go ahead.
Alright, so moving on, for the sensors, mainly you can read, same idea if you're talking about analog values, like for example, some sensors just give analog value, for example, probably like, what you call it, like, let me think, a sensor that and reads how bright the room you're in is. So it would be actually like light resistance. So the more light it gives, the less resistance, or the other way around, whatever type of sensor you can get, and that would actually give the Arduino the same kind of value, like just an analog value between 0 and 5 volts, and you can correspond that or map this value to whatever kind of brightness you're looking for, or some other sensor can give you like how strong a magnetic field is, and so on. So they all depend on that kind of ideas. Some other sensors, instead of sending analog values, they actually give digital values, and they do that by using what's called the one-wire protocol, something that the Arduino guys came up with, which I believe is sort of a piece of art and also like genius as well. So the value that comes out of the sensor gets sent to the Arduino as a certain type of pulses that translates to some digital information that the Arduino can actually translate. Usually you would need a library to load into the onto your program, into the Arduino when you actually flash it, to handle that kind of digital transmission, if you will, or like digital data transfer between the serial and, between the sensor and the Arduino. Among these sensors is one that we also use, like the temperature and humidity sensor. So the sensor will actually read the temperature in the room it's in and the humidity as well, and would send this information as different values to the Arduino using the one-wire protocol.
Yeah, let me jump in. So one of the things that Ali made mention of was the notion of libraries. Those are pre-written pieces of code by somebody else that can perform a function for you. So that way, all you have to do is worry about the function as a black box. You don't have to worry about how to, let's say, program to talk to a serial port or how to do a particular kind of task. So it's pre-built software with its own declared variables and the like, and you just say, you know, essentially include this library in my program, and then you call the functions in that library as you see fit. Saves you having to write a lot of code and saves reinventing the wheel. So that's part of that. Go ahead, Ali.
Alright, thanks Gordon for explaining that. Alright, so yes, that's what a library is. So you would use such libraries along with whatever sensors you have to read either values, or you can also use the values that you have to output something, maybe like turn something on. You can use like the high and low values to actually drive a relay. So if the temperature, for example, gets too high over a certain limit that you specify, you can drive a relay to turn on a fan or something, if you want to use that, for example, to control like the temperature of a room or something, or to turn on or off something based on whatever condition that you read in. In our scenario, we're actually using this data and transferring it to a Raspberry Pi to send it as EVRS message, but it can be pretty much used for whatever you want to use it for. Once you have this information and once you have the idea of what you want to actually do, it's pretty much straightforward. After that, you do actually type C++ code for the Arduino. It's just that there are functions or libraries that's written specifically for the Arduino, but the syntax itself is actually C++, indeed. I would say if you're not into programming, it's still pretty much learnable. Like for most of the people, it might take some time to learn, but it definitely is something that everybody can learn, I believe. So once you have that, you pretty much program your Arduino to do something like pull the temperature every couple minutes, or depends on your application, you can do that, or turn something on or off based on something you have from a sensor, or just wait idling until something happens and let that trigger a certain procedure that you want the Arduino to do. So, like once you have what you want, there's no limit to what you can do with the Arduino. That's just my take on that. With that, I will get back to Ness and say AL0Y back to Net Control.
Alrighty. Well, that's kind of helpful, to say the least. Probably like drinking from a fire hose, Art. Do you have any questions about what we've given you before this far?
I have one comment. Many years ago, I started to build and got three-quarters of the way through it, a DC power supply. And one of the things that I didn't like about the design of it, this is when you could readily buy components from electronic stores and things were readily available. Not anything like these Arduinos. But it didn't have any type of protection other than a fuse to save the transistors in it from blowing. And I don't know if I'm ever going to finish it up. I would like to someday. I really should pull it out and take a look at it. If I remember right, I stuck the magazine with the schematic in it inside the box that it's built in. So I thought maybe something like that might be a possibility for it. Back to Net.
Okay. Well, there's quite a lot of things you can do with an Arduino. There's an article in this month's QSD, as Jim mentioned, on using it as a code practice device. Even got a built-in library. I'm going to throw out a thing that says, you use an Arduino and not a Raspberry Pi when you run a Raspberry Pi and not an Arduino. Generally speaking, it really depends on what your preferences are and what you're doing. If you're monitoring voltages and stuff like that, you need to have some sort of analog input. It's much easier to do with an Arduino than a Raspberry Pi. You could fabricate something that reads in, a gated multiplexer, where it reads a bunch of inputs that are set up a bunch of voltage dividers, but it wouldn't have the precision of what they provide in the Arduino, typically. You'd have to wire up a lot of circuitry to make it work, whereas the methodology that Ali described, the Arduino, much cleaner. In any case, you're going to take your voltage divided, divide it by 4 and measure stuff, and then multiply that same answer by that reading by 4 to get to the real voltage, because you have to keep the measured voltage across the voltage divider down to 0 and 5 volts. Otherwise you'll blow the darn thing up. So you don't want to do that. And then, temperature humidity sensors are like $3 about $6, are the better ones. And you can find them on Amazon if you know one part number. So the they're all expensive, largely anyway.
closing that reply as, let me rephrase that. Okay, you can use a Raspberry Pi for almost everything. You can use an Arduino for. However, take in consideration, the Raspberry Pi runs on 3.3 volts only. It does not go on 5 volts, even though you actually power it by 5 volts USB. It does not measure 5 volts. So if you have an application that you already using an Arduino 4 and you want to port that to Raspberry Pi, you will have to scale down the voltage somehow. Most sensors do work on 3.3 volts as well as 5 volts, but something like voltage dividers and so on, you will actually have to work around that or pretty much figure what needs to be changed before you go ahead with that. Second thing is the Raspberry Pi doesn't natively support analog values. It only does high and low. It does not do analog ranges. So to do that, you will actually have to use an external analog to digital converter, an ADC chip. They usually are cheap, like to get, like probably you can get these like 5 for like $10 or something like that, maybe less. However, when comparing these to the Arduinos, they seem to be slower when you need to read multiple data from different bins from the converter. So you would actually need to run a read on one bin, sleep for a couple of milliseconds to give time for the capacitor to discharge on the converters. Then you can read the other bin and so on. So when you just use an analog values on a Raspberry Pi compared to Arduino, I would go for the Arduino definitely. That's just my preference, but I believe I have valid reasons to do that. That's just something to consider when moving from Arduino to Raspberry Pi. Also, the other difference is actually the programming language itself. This is up.
Okay, alright, how
are
you doing?
How's
that fire hose experience going for you?
Okay, so just add one thing. On Raspberry Pi, the Raspberry Pi itself is just like a whole operating system running mainly a computer, if you will, compared to the Arduino that just sits there and does whatever you tell it to do. So on a Raspberry Pi, you will actually have to program something, usually in Python, programming language, and you will have to actually program the Raspberry Pi itself to call that application that you just wrote in Python to do that thing. It wouldn't just be plug and play just by connecting the things. You would actually assume that it will work. You will actually have to start the program and actually have some routine or a script to start that program after the whole operating system is loaded for the Raspberry Pi. With that, back to net, AL0I.
Okay. That's an excellent treatment of this subject. Good introduction. Thank you, Ollie. Art, does that leave you with any lingering questions?
No, it was a pretty good explanation. I have a feel of some of the things that you can do with it. I know you were showing a graph of the temperature and humidity control, and well, I guess you have to do your homework because you need the sensors, and then you got to figure out whether or not they will work with this Arduino. So when I get a chance, I'll do some research on it and look it up. I don't have any immediate applications for it, but I guess there's a whole bunch of cool things that you can do with it. So if any of you guys do something along those lines, let me know. I'd be interested in checking it out. W2TTT, WB2TQT for ID, back to net control.
Okie doke. Anybody else? anybody else want to chime in on this question or comment?
Connected N2 DHZ.
NJ2BS, repeat.
Okay, nothing heard. Alrighty. Alright, let's go to, the second topic, which is power. Okay, so I have two. Actually, I have three, in my yard. So, the room 25 is supposed to be the house. It's not a separate structure, it is part of the house. And for a lot of jurisdictions, that's very important. Build a separate structure, it's very, very dicey as to whether they'll let you do that. A lot of towns have rules about that. If it falls from the ground, you know, you have to have the distance from the base all the way to the top of the tower as your setback. So you can avoid a lot of that by just bolting it to your house. You will probably have a height limitation, typically 35 feet. That is usually processes for going more than that. Some towns are pretty permissive on permits, others are more difficult. I know my town's pretty good. You put up a tower up to 35 feet with a simple permit. And no big deal, Amateurio specifically called out. If, however, you want to go higher, you might have to water over time. And that's what people typically do in order just to keep things simple. But you can go through the variance process, and every neighbor who wants to complain just to sit there and point their bony finger of indignation at you, so you got to be careful about that. How did I build mine? It's very simple. My neighbor, before he put in his pool, had to put up a fence, but sitting on his back deck overlooking my driveway in my yard, the old tower, which I hit up temporarily, it was an easy way tower that required no concrete. It had essentially failed. Hinge, so I'm not a big fan of those towers. So he said, well, you got this other tower in the garage, why don't you just put it up? And I wasn't sure where. And he went to his garage, came out with a rusty axe head and a 5-pound hammer, and proceeds to chip away at my driveway after looking at the side of my house and figuring out where the tower could go, get maximum support from the house at the same time, also get be bolted to the house and not be in the way. So we did that, and I dug the hole 3.5 feet deep per the Roan 25 specification, whatever it was, and then some. Got some 2-inch gravel, put it at the bottom of the hole, along with some concrete to follow. The real trick is to make sure that the legs go through the gravel and can't be clogged up with concrete. Because if you get water stuck in your leg of your tower and it freezes in the winter, it'll split the tower and then compromise its strength. So, anyway, I put a section of tower into the hole, made a form in that old thing, and then braced the section of tower such that it was absolutely straight. So I put some wooden bracing on it, and when I had the concrete poured, I made sure that it did get out of vertical. I just aligned it while the concrete was still wet, kept moving it around a little bit until everything was hunky-dory. Once it was lined up in vertical in all axes, I left it be for a week, and then proceeded to add sections. And I used a gin pole. Fairlawn has a really nice gin pole for Roan 25. And
I'd recommend using theirs if you're using room 25. If you're going to have a different kind of tower, a tilt-over or a tilt-over crank-up, that's fine too. As I get older, I like that idea, in case you're wondering. We can talk about different styles of tilt-over and crank-up, but I have an Illumina T140, which normally tilts over at the heel, but I made it tip over at the 11-foot mark or so, and then I built my pergola such that two of the verticals have a cross member that's a little taller, about at the 11-foot level, so I can crank down the tower and then tilt it over, and the little H-frame on the pergola holds the holds that part of the antenna and the tower up, and then and that works really well. I can work on the antennas on the deck. Last but not least, the base for the Illumina is a little creative. As I said, instead of something at the very base, I used aluminum angle, heavy aluminum angle, like 2 inch by 2 inch by 1/4 inch plate, 16 feet long angles. I U-bolted two of those to the tower, the 20-foot tower leg. I took a 1/2 inch gusset plate of aluminum and bolted to that, and that has all the U-bolts going on a pivot point that goes between two 16-foot 8x8s that are about 3.5 feet in the ground. Just about 3 feet in the ground actually. And they're sitting on they're sitting on a gravel bed and then filled in with clay. It's pretty easy. You can always fill it with concrete if you want. But I did not in my case. In any case, that provides a ridiculously stable base that theoretically could be moved. It's not permanent. It's not concrete. And I drove a pipe in as a pivot point between the two pressure-treated 8x8s. And it has no sign of wear and tear after 14, 15 years. So there we go. That's the story of my two towers. The third tower is just two sections of Roan 25 and a 15-foot mast bolted to my kid's old play gym. It's not even in the ground, but it's not going anywhere. And it holds the end of a dipole in the back corner of my lot. So there you go. Art?
Yeah, very good, Bob. I got most of that, probably about 80%. You are a little noisy. A couple times you dropped out, but I got most of that. So the aluminum angle iron, the aluminum angle iron, you put it around the base, around the equilateral triangle, each leg of the tower. What was the purpose of that? To stiffen it? Over.
Yeah, am I full quieting now?
Yeah, it seems as though you're better now.
I moved the truck, sorry about that. Yes, that's what I did. I used two pieces of aluminum angle to stiffen up the aluminum tower leg, because the aluminum tower leg is pretty thin, and it's designed to pivot from the heel as opposed to from, let's say, the hip. And I have that tower, you know, definitely pivoting from the hip. I cranked the tower down, I tilt it over, and I use myself as a counterweight. Although I may put a boat winch on it, finally I have been putting that off for years because I didn't need to. But I'm 61 years old, and maybe I don't want to use my body as a counterweight anymore. It's probably safer if I don't. A simple boat winch and some good steel cable will be just fine. I just pulled the tower in and out that way. A ratcheting crank winch would be just fine. Reversible.
N2DHZ disconnected. KD2PPG disconnected.
Well, apparently we had some guys on here, and I did ask for the internet.
No, I didn't hear anybody other than you and Ali.
And Bob, and then K2PPG was here, and N2VHZ from Nebraska was in here for a while. I guess he was just listening while he was doing his thing. But anyway, but yes, that's what I did. I stiffened it. And then high on that plate, I have a, high on those angles, I have a aluminum plate, which has four U-bolts over my pivot point.
Oh, okay. Yeah, I've been looking online at all the different accessories and different type of towers and everything, and just getting myself familiarized with the various different types of towers, components. And I ran across something, I think it was by Martin, maybe Martin Towers, a tram. It looks as though you can raise it and lower it on a, on maybe just on their specific tower, or something like with a hand winch. I don't know how that would work when you got a beam up there and everything. And they didn't show any pictures of it actually being used. They just showed pictures of it, you know, what it would look like if you bought it, not installed on the tower with an antenna and everything. Are you familiar with that at all?
Yeah, so Glenn Martin Engineering makes some wonderful stuff. And it's all aluminum. They do make some roof towers of various heights. They're square, and they're very nice. They also make a tower, or a couple of different towers, with their little tram thing that goes up and down. And basically, it has a base plate at the bottom of this tram for a rotator, and at the top of the tram, it's got a spot for a thrust bearing, and so that's pretty cool. And you can run it up and down the tower, and depending on how you ran the guy wires and what the wind loading situation is, etc., you can usually bring it down without tangling the antenna in the wire or in the guy wires. Very, very nice stuff. I've been tempted to put one on mine just to bring my antennas to the roof line. Because getting on my roof is fairly simple, but then climbing further is a bit of a nuisance. But that would mean I would have to sacrifice probably a good 10 feet or so of masting and height for my VHF antennas, and I'm not so sure I want to do that. But it worked. And they also make one of those trams for a Rhone 25 tower as well. So that's the other thing. You don't have to buy their tower. Their tower might be a little tighter, might work a little bit better, but they do sell a tram situation for a Rhone 25 as well, Art.
Oh, okay. I did not know that. So I'm just doing some research and on the internet, and I'm also looking, as a matter of fact, I'm looking in the DX catalog right now. I think the sections of aluminum tower that I purchased used, I believe they're from an American tower company, and I'm going to have to give them a call and see if somehow or another I can verify what I have is actually their product or maybe somebody else's product. I may even add another section to it. It's like a three-leg conventional tower, but the mount that came with it is for flat top roof mounting, and I'm going to have to do some work on that to put it on a pitched roof and then guy it and everything else, and I'll probably strap it somehow or another to the house, but. I find this stuff interesting, and you know, I'm trying to learn a little bit more about it. Never got involved with the towers, of course. I got my pipe tower up there, and I don't know. The dipole seems to be working pretty good, so maybe I'll never put those beams back up. But somehow or another, I hope someday I do. Back to net.
Okay, very good, Art. Yeah, I mean, there are a thousand different ways to go. I mean, as I said, I've got a straight up, you know, tower that I just pushed up a mast. And I haven't had to do anything with it recently because the way I set it up with a pulley, robust piece of cable on the top, and now I just put my pull rope through and hold the end of my dipole up with it. So I haven't had to mess with that in years. And then the other one is, I've got a 6 meter beam on the big round tower, along with G7144 2 meter Omni that tops out at 85 feet on the top of the tower and the mast. And then the other is the Illumina has a rotatable dipole for 15, 12, and 10, and it's got a It's got a 2 meter Yagi on it and a 6 meter Yagi on it for sideband and CW and stuff. And so I've got 2 6 meter beams on 2 different rotators, which is kind of handy. So, you know, overall we're pretty fortunate, pretty happy with how all this is working. And pretty darn pleased about it, as they say. And I've got miscellaneous wires running all over the property. I have a 40-meter Invis. I have a 80-40 dipole at about 35 feet. And then I have a 40-20 inverted V that's really cut long for the bands. It's actually set up to be just below the 20-meter band, just below the 40-meter band. And that's for the Federal Shares Network, which is a... It's sort of like Mars without the military, but it's for to talk to government and infrastructure providers such as my company, so I have that as well.
Well, you have a very nice setup, and, you know, you're still young enough to do things with it. I guess that's the key. You know, when I was younger, putting up stuff like this, I thought nothing at all about tackling a project like that, but well, now the winter's holding me up too, so we'll see how it comes in the spring. Maybe by then I'll be able to tackle some of these projects a little more aggressively. So yeah, all right, very good, Bob. Thank you for the information. It was nice chatting with you this evening and hearing you and Ali, and say 73s, and see if anybody else wants to pick it up with you. W2TTT, this is WB2TQT. 73s, guys.
Okay, just one other thing. On the main tower, I also have a fairly large 2-gig dish with a radome. Right now, it's not pointing. We're trying to point it toward Bob, and that did not work. And also, I have a cross Yagi, a long cross Yagi on 900. With a mesh network node also pointed toward Bob that can't get through the hills to his place, so such is life. Also across the roof I have a couple of Omni antennas for 2 meters and 440 and 220 and the like. Alrighty, well that's all I have on this subject. Anybody else have any questions before we secure on this topic and go to another one? Alrighty. Any other stations want to check into the net or bring a topic or both? Okie dokie. Well, I'm going to say 73Z, y'all. Have a nice evening. It's been a pleasure. And look forward to... I won't be at the Fairlawn presentation tomorrow night. I'm going to the Devil game. But just a reminder, Fairlawn's meeting is tomorrow night. It's at the Senior Center. And their guest speaker is George Sabai, KC2GLG, the guy who runs the Skywarn net. And then, Kit Night is next Tuesday for Barra at the Washington Township Senior Center. And so look forward to seeing you there about 7 o'clock on Tuesday for that. And I don't have any more at this point, but I think that's about it. And we've got other topics, but we'll save them for another night. 73 all, and have a great evening. This is Whiskey 2 Tango 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 73.
NJ2BS, repeat. the NJ2BS repeater use PL151.4.